Ask the MP. Ask the Right Honorable is in the hot seat. Ask the MP. Ask the MP. With Farai on CFM Stereo.
This is ZFM Stereo, my station, your station. I thank you so much for tuning in this Tuesday evening. It is time now for Ask the MP, which comes to you only on ZFM Stereo, my station, your station. 106.4 is our frequency here in Harare, but you can listen to us live. Just log on to zfmstereo.co.zw. You can also catch us on various apps, including TuneIn, and I know many of you are tuned in from all over the world. We do welcome you, and we thank you for tuning in today. Other frequencies in Zimbabwe, as we always like to update to achieve 99.8, Nyanga 98.2, Gweru, the city of progress, 104.3, and in Victoria Falls, 106.5. Ask the MP comes to you on ZFM Stereo. Every week we bring in different members of parliament, civic society organizations to talk about issues that are being debated and discussed in parliament. Tonight we are focusing on the very topical, some may say controversial, but I think certainly significant debate that is going on around the electoral bill, debate around the reforms in that electoral bill. We know that it was one of the key pieces of legislation that parliamentarians were seized with when they returned from their adjournment, and we'll be getting an update on that, as well as giving you an opportunity, most importantly as Zimbabweans, to pose your questions, to have your say and to contribute to this discussion. You can do that via our WhatsApp platform, 0731 168 045. Do get in touch with us, send us a WhatsApp message, tell us who you are, where you're contributing from, ask a question and have your say. Tonight my guests are none other than Honorable Fortune Chassi. He's been on this show several times. Great to have you back, sir. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you and good evening, Farai.
Indeed, and alongside him we have none other than Honorable Tabitha Kanengoni Malinga. Ma'am, great to have you on the program, and it is a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Farai. I'm happy to be here.
Fantastic. Listeners, once again, this program belongs to you. We want you to have your say. You can also get in touch with us via WhatsApp. We're streaming this live. Sorry, you can via Facebook. We're streaming this live, Facebook Live. Catch our stream there. You can watch this live if you want to see us in the studio, but you can also pose and contribute via that platform. So do certainly get in touch with us. Honorable Chassi, let me begin with you. How far are we with this electoral bill?
Well, I think we are basically done. It has been sent to Senate, and unfortunately I wasn't in Parliament today. But I believe and hope that it will be considered by Senate tomorrow.
Depending on who you speak to, we hear that there before debate even began, there was a long list of things that, whether it was civic society, different political parties wanted to see incorporated in that bill. Is everyone happy?
It's not always possible to make everybody happy, but I'm very happy myself and satisfied that as political parties in Parliament, we were in agreement on more issues than those in respect of which we were not in agreement. And the way the system works is that when there is no agreement, you then have to vote. And of course, the party that has the majority takes the position. But I think by and large, we had Honorable Gonese from the MDC, who did marvelous work and made a lot of proposals. And the Minister of Justice was also very good and accepted quite a number of the suggestions by the opposition, and I think that is the way the system really should work. And I think this is an ongoing process. Mm-hmm. We will still have opportunities after the elections to continue to broaden our democratic principles and practices. So it's not as if the door is shut to any further discussions and suggestions.
Honorable Kanengoni Malinga, let me bring you in. What is the sentiment of your counterparts across the floor Do they feel that, you know, the best that could be done has been done, or are they still aggrieved?
Well, like Honorable Chassis said, you know, when it comes to a process like this, you can't satisfy everybody. But from my analysis, I think majority of the issues, the sticking issues were discussed, in particular issues to do with gender and how women can be well represented or defended by the law, issues to do with just something as simple as defining concepts, and going further to talk about the people's right to vote and the new BVR system. So things that are straightforward and clear cut, I think people are satisfied with. It remains to be seen how the amendments will be adopted in real life. But I think majority of the people are happy because the process allowed them to be heard, to debate extensively. And if you are given the opportunity to debate extensively, you can accept when you win some or lose some. So I think the general sentiments are quite positive across the floor.
You said debate extensively, so I'd imagine that everything that could have been said was possibly said. But many people might be wondering, look, why has it taken us so long to get here? What were some of the stumbling blocks? One of the accusations that is often put on the table is lack of political will, lack of will by the executive. You sit in Parliament, perhaps you could tell us why we've taken this long to get here. Is it indeed a lack of will to implement this?
Probably to a certain extent, but everybody knows that we have crossed floors and we're in a new dispensation. And there's this desire and will to put issues that were preventing the amendments to go forward, to the negative things to be corrected, as it were. I think maybe there was not real focus on the important issues before. And people tend to take issues seriously when they get closer to the actual election. I think because we were so far from the election, people were kind of relaxed about it and thought, "Ah, we'll get to it when we get to it." But now that we're approaching the election, it's more real, and the opposition and the ruling government alike want to see the election go a certain way, and they want to be represented in a certain way. And with the coming of the new dispensation, everybody's hopeful that whatever it is that they tried to fight for before and couldn't get, they can get it now, because President Mnangagwa has promised that the elections will be free, fair and credible. He's even gone so far as inviting observers to come in. So this gives a lot of hope for people, and I think this is what has also driven people to have the energy to actually get into it and get it going, because everyone is eager to have the elections.
0731-168-045, 0731-168-045. Send us a WhatsApp message with a question, a comment or contribution. Also, you know, follow us on our Facebook page, Facebook Live. You can also contribute via that platform. Honorable Chase, I want to ask this, and perhaps even, you know, to both the honorables here, is the person out there who may be listening, the prospective voter, the Zimbabweans out there, how intimate do you think they know what has been happening here? Are they, are these, I would imagine these are reforms ideally that they have said we want to see when we vote, when we run an election, this is what we want to see. How updated have they been in terms of what's happening now?
Well, I think it must be admitted that we have taken too long to complete this amendment process. Ideally, we ought to have done it much earlier, and that would have allowed members of the public to understand more and interrogate the issues more. But their level of understanding is also a function of their interaction with their political representatives in Parliament and their parties, I think that the members of Parliament who have been contributing have been interacting with their constituencies and have taken instructions from them on these very, very, you know, critical issues that got to do with the elections.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And, go ahead.
And like I said, more time would have been useful to ensure that there is a more interrogation of what it is that is planned, or, you know, has been planned with respect to the amendments. But the political parties have been meeting at various levels, at the high level meeting, where some of these things have been discussed. In particular, one of the products has been the code of conduct, which, as you will be aware, is now part, has replaced the old code of conduct that was in the schedule to the Electoral Act, with a new code of conduct, better improved, which we hope that our political systems and government systems will help to cascade that code of conduct to the various echelons of our political structures, so that people understand the need for free, fair and credible elections, and the implications of not engaging in that type of free electoral practice.
Indeed. Just to notify listeners that we, because a listener just asked why I have two MPs from the same political party, we did invite the opposition. Unfortunately, I would imagine that they are occupied by other things that are happening at this point, but none of the opposition, none of the MDCT MPs or other opposition MPs or independent MPs rather, were available to come on this program, but we certainly did extend an invitation to them. Let me turn to you, Honorable Kanengoni Malinga. Issues to do with women. You mentioned that those were some of the things that were incorporated. Now, I would ask, you know, it's not the first time, certainly, maybe not specifically to do with elections, but it's not the first time that Parliament has enacted laws that support women, that empower women, but in reality, those things never happen. They never materialize. Essentially, it's on paper, but in reality, it doesn't happen. How do we ensure that what has been passed here, and perhaps you could give us, if you have details of what has been incorporated specifically focusing on women, and how to ensure that it will actually happen in this election, which is impending?
I think let me take it back from elements of the previous question to say that I think what I have observed is that there's a gap between the August House, and a huge gap between the August House and the electorate, in that what we discuss in the House sometimes is very technical, and it's not something that you can take as is to go to the people and say, this is what we want to do. You sort of scare them away. Mm-hmm. But we need to be able to bridge that gap, so that whatever we discuss in the House and when we take it to the ground, people are able to actually participate effectively. Now, when it comes to women's issues, we've seen the same problem. We fight for the 50-50 issues in Parliament. We fight for it at many different platforms. Even the civil society fights for it. Even NGOs fight for it. But when we go on the ground and we talk to women, we are still at the point where we first have to educate them on what it means to stand up for each other, to stand up for ourselves, and to use the law when it now exists for our benefit. I'm an MP for a rural constituency, so the people in Chiwesha, for example, don't have easy access to the internet or to social media as much as those in like peri-urban and urban areas. So they're always a little bit behind on the issues, and you have to make an extra effort as an MP to actually go and discuss these issues with them and to make them understand what it means. Now, the issue of gender balance or gender equity, it's not something that we can win as women alone, uh-huh. You know. The men have to be on board as well. And I think we are yet to discover the tactic that can help men come on board without feeling threatened. During the debate on the Electoral Amendment Bill, Honorable Missi Hairambwe Mshonga, who is the chairperson of the committee, Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Women and Youth Affairs, brought up some issues that she wanted amended in the bill. One of them was to use Section 17 of the National Constitution as part of the preamble, which talks about gender balance and women's issues and so on. And her idea was, let's have this preamble in there so that whatever it is that happens for the rest of the bill, the issue of gender balance is considered. No matter what it is we're talking about, we are conscious of the 50-50 issue. Unfortunately, the minister did not think it was a good idea to put it in the preamble, but however, he did agree to touch on gender issues as the bill progresses. The issues that we agreed to were issues of definition, for example, like how do we define gender, or how do we define gender equality? And in terms of defining gender, it was agreed that gender be defined as the social meaning given to being either female or male in a given society. Now, we can take this for granted, but when you try, when you actually try to apply some of these issues, you then discover that defining them is quite important. And then the issue of gender equality was also agreed to in terms of how to define it in the bill. And this was agreed that it is the enjoyment by women and men of socially valued good opportunities, resources, and rewards. Now, these are issues that were accepted, so issues to do with definition. But the minister did say, okay, we will look at gender issues as and when it is possible. You know, so this issue of as and when, you know, is where you see that there's a loophole. So it may be applied, it may not be applied. We'll see how it goes and so on and so forth. If we look at our institutions, like where these issues are implemented, majority of the people that are meant to implement these issues or who are in these positions are male. So there are very few women in there who can actually pinpoint these red flags and fight for it. We fight for it from the outside in most cases. So in a nutshell, I can say that we need to take the debate outside of parliament and make it more effective on the ground and make women understand so they, the basic woman in the rural area, can fight for the issues as well. If you're in parliament and there's more men than women, you know, you can't win it. But if you mobilize the masses, then you have more women than men who can fight for the issues. So that's what I can say about that.
We'll come back to that, but listeners, keep those contributions coming through. Someone's getting in touch here via Facebook Live. Frank Mandea says, and he's asking, you can't satisfy everybody. I think it's coming back to that issue of, you know, where you're saying you can't make everyone happy. But
yes,
he says, electoral reforms now, we the people want it.
Yes.
Now, sentiments like this, don't you think that where you say that we haven't been able to do everything that everybody wanted, open the door for dispute and contention, where if, for instance, Honorable Chasi doesn't prevail in his constituency, you can say, but these reforms were not fully implemented.
I think, look, it's easy for someone to say we want it, but there are a lot of platforms that are created for people to come and participate so that they can voice their opinion on these issues. Parliamentary portfolio committees go out to the people, they invite people to come and have their input when it comes to everything that is before parliament. What we've witnessed is that when committees go out to meet with the people, the numbers that attend are very, very low in most cases. And yet you have the invitation being put on radio, it's put on TV, it's put on print media, but it seems people don't take it as seriously as they should. Now, when it then bites them, when what they need is not implemented, it's easy to then say the legislators are not doing a good job or our issues are not being heard. I want to encourage people to be able to be more active in participating in these gatherings that Parliament holds so that their voice is really truly heard. In an area where there are 20,000 people and you have 100 people attending a meeting, you know, it's not a true reflection of what the people want. So at the end of the day, you might find a minority voice being incorporated as if it's a majority voice. So I think we need to develop a culture of participating more, even especially if you're not a leader, especially if you don't have a position You know, you must feel that you can lead from behind. And I think this culture has to be cultivated in us as Zimbabweans.
And hold people to account, which is what we encourage you listeners to do on this platform, which is Ask the MP. This is why we bring these members of parliament. You vote them into those seats, and so you must be able to interact and interface with them. A couple of more contributions coming through. A listener here says, we are all Zimbabweans. It's even better if you make life better for the populace of Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe comes first, parties later. I think speaking about the partisanship and the need to put Zimbabwe first. Another listener here says, thanks for the show. If we talk about elections without talking about the ballot paper, then we haven't started talking elections yet. Now, there's a statement made here which we need clarity on, and I've seen various theories on social media, and here's an opportunity to maybe shed more light on it. It says, where did that paper come from? I don't know which ballot paper or if they've indeed been printed. Aren't we being exposed to the Nikuv era again? We will march against the government. We can't tolerate no reforms. I'll allow you to respond to that and a lot more. Let me take a couple of more coming through. That issue, I've certainly seen people talking about ballot papers being printed. I'm not sure where it's coming from. We want doors to be opened for a better future. Thank you so much for that contribution. There's one more I want to read before I hand over to the parliamentarians here, which talks about... Someone says, what were the contentious issues? I think a number of them have been raised, and certainly the ones that have been addressed we've spoken about here on the program. I just want to take a couple of more contributions coming through. Someone says, you know, you're talking about wanting to address these reforms after elections, some of the reforms that are outstanding, suggesting that people, MPs, might relax after that and, you know, think we've got another 5 years before the next election and end up in the situation where we are now, as was alluded to earlier, that we want to do everything at the 11th hour. Here's a quick one on, we are the Minister of Women and Gender. This means gender refers to female, and the minister is female. The permanent secretary is female. Kezi Munin Harare, thank you so much for that contribution. I think responding to what you've just talked about, the Honorable Kanengoni Malinga. Electoral reforms are significant to a free and fair and credible election, but true reforms begin in the heart. It is not the absence of these reforms that causes inconsistencies, but irregularities originate from the heart. It's time for the ruling party to start on a clean slate. The need for electoral reforms began as far back as the year 2000, but the ruling party was dragging its feet. This is Mos Mandizhidza Kwasadza. Thank you so much for those contributions. We'll take a few more during the course of this program. Keep them coming through via WhatsApp 0731-168-045 or via Facebook Live. Honorable Chassie, your response to some of these issues.
Thank you very much, Farai. I think that it's very good that members of the public are taking an active interest in the electoral laws and also in the work that Parliament and parliamentarians actually carry out. This is important because elections are the gateway to democracy, which is the principle that we've agreed on as a country in our constitution. It permeates literally every part, every article of the constitution. Now, there's been, I'll start with the issue concerning ballot paper. Mm-hmm. And it is important that the public is asking questions relating to that. Mm-hmm. Because it reflects a number of things. One, it reflects the fact that there is a mistrust amongst us, and it is the responsibility of ZEC, as the body that has been given the responsibility in the constitution to run elections. Sometimes perceptions are reality. Mm-hmm. And so we need all stakeholders to reflect to the public that we are sincere in what we are doing. But in so doing, we need to realize that ZEC is an independent commission in terms of the constitution. So too much micromanagement or involvement in the work that they do diminishes their independence. We need to take all steps to strengthen that organization, because it is a pinnacle of where we want to take this country to in terms of our system. And so we cannot really, in my view, be involved in every step of the electoral processes that ZEC must run. We might then just dissolve it
and run it from parliament.
Yeah, and run it from parliament or from the ministry or something like that. So we need to respect that independence, and we need to continue to find ways of making it very, very clear that ZEC is important, is independent. And this has to do with how they work, how we relate to them, and also what information we give to the public. If people do not have information, they are more inclined to act on the basis of suspicions. We are coming from a background of a lot of suspicion, and we say we have now a new dispensation. And I think the president is doing a good job to assure Zimbabweans that we have a new system which is open. That's why engagement is so important and fundamental to our foreign policy. We want all international players to come and witness what it is that we are doing in terms of the elections that we are going to be engaged in a few months. And that is very critical. It's not being done necessarily for outsiders, but the elections themselves must be credible, they must be fair and free to all participants in Zimbabwe, first and foremost. But there is a listener who I think has made a very important point to say that all these things start from the heart. Issues of gender inclusion also start from the heart. You can have a piece of law, but those who implement and apply that law must be passionate about what it is they are doing. For example, if we look at gender issues, we should not, as I think we currently do, view it as a women's thing. Gender issues are also men's issues. And we, as men, we need to recognize that the patriarchal system that we have does not advance the women's cause. Just look at the names that crop up from the primaries that are ongoing and count how many women there are. So, and this is notwithstanding that we have more female voters than men. Whoever attends a political meeting, to be obvious that there are more women
voters. Yeah.
Yes. And so we need to take these things wholeheartedly and sincerely, and to also be passionate about our efforts towards achieving a fully democratic state. It's not something that will happen overnight, but we have got in our conduct as political parties, as institutions of government, show that we are very sincere about what we would like the system to be.
Honorable, I can see you furiously making notes there, but in addition to what you're about to respond, I've got a listener who's got in touch with us via Facebook Live, and his name is Michael Chimsoro. He says, I understand that the majority of Zimbabweans are located in rural areas, and the concept of gender is a debatable topic on new media, Facebook, Twitter, etc. This will partially and selectively benefit the women in urban areas. The women in rural areas are not fully represented in the notion of gender and other development issues, and even electoral issues. How best are you serving the general populace in those rural areas?
Wow, that's a really good contribution. I think I want to go back to the issue of defining concepts that we spoke about earlier. Somebody else mentioned that when people talk about gender, they mean women or female. Somebody commented on that. The first thing that I think we have to understand is that gender does not mean female. And when you speak about gender issues, we must be very careful when we articulate the issues that we are not making ourselves fall into the same trap. Gender issues have to do with they're women's issues, they're also men's issues, they're children's issues. They're all incorporated when we talk about gender. We're just talking about equity. We're talking about balancing something that is not balanced at the present moment. Now, if we look at rural areas, our women have been socialized to believe that they are supposed to be submissive to men, that if they voice their opinion, they're being disrespectful. And if you see that in the rural areas in particular, if you start to talk about issues of gender balance, they're very shy about it because they feel they're breaking some kind of laws. But I think it's, again, in the definition. Like, if we explain it in the proper way, to say, no, we're not saying disrespect your husbands. Or we're not saying you now don't have to, you know, be submissive as the Bible says. You know what I mean? It's a matter of seeing where your strengths are as men, as women, seeing how both strengths can work to our advantage. Uh-huh. And use that to our benefit. It doesn't have to, because when we talk about it, we're not talking about gender equity in the home per se. We're talking about opportunities outside the home where women can have access to the same things that men have access to. Of course, we are built differently. Of course, we have different strengths. But we have to be able to identify those things that can help to develop our nation. I want to give Rwanda as an example. If you look at the parliament of Rwanda, I think they are one of the fewest countries in Africa that have managed to achieve great heights in terms of gender balance. If you look at the country itself, it developed so quickly in such a short space of time. And I want to believe that it's this issue of gender balance that also brings development on board. If there's no gender balance, there's very little development, if any. And we have to realize this, not just as women, but also our male counterparts have to realize that there is a lot to benefit from being equal in terms of access to resources or opportunities and so on and so forth. Now, having a Ministry of Women Affairs and then having a Minister of Women Affairs being female and the PERMSEC being female, it's not enough. That's just one ministry out of how many do we have now? We have so many of them, mm-hmm. and they keep changing, you know. We are not saying, let's have a ministry and be happy that we now have a Ministry of Women Affairs. We're saying, we have of all the ministries, let's also have women being ministers of finance, uh-huh. for example, uh-huh. or ministers of transport and infrastructure development. Women can do those types of jobs. Now, I want to go to ZEC. Uh-huh. We have seen in the previous government and in the current government that ZEC has been run by women. Uh-huh. And I want to say that when we started having women at the helm of ZEC, I think a lot of positive change started happening. And I'm sure President Mnangagwa realized this. That's why he replaced Justice Makarao with another female in that position. Because issues of sensitive nature really honestly are run better by women. Women are afraid of going to jail. I have to be very honest with you. And when it comes to propaganda and issues to do with rigging and so on and so forth, that I think that type of stuff is not really built in the female brain. Uh-huh. And we're built to want to do everything right, to tick certain boxes, and to show that we can do this. So I think it's really important to have, I mean, I want to challenge His Excellency mm-hmm. that if, when we pass these elections, I want to challenge him to put females in the most critical ministries, transport, even home affairs, even security, finance. Put women in there and see what happens. I think we'll have a great change. Now, we also have women that are permanent secretaries. Uh-huh. Right, we have male ministers, but we also have female permanent secretaries. So we have ministries that are being headed by women. But I think we need to see a more aggressive approach to the issue of having females lead. We have a lot of strong females. And I want to say, I agree with Honorable Chassis when he was talking about looking at our current primary elections, and we also that's ZANU-PF, and then we also have MDC elections that are coming up. We're already seeing a lot of women being kicked out, not by the electorate per se, but by this male force, where we are failing to protect the women that are already there in the system. So we're already kicking them out. I read with sadness that Honorable Jesse Majome decided to run as an independent candidate because of issues that she did not agree with in her party, one of which was that they were saying that she's now too old to be an MP. And I said, really? I mean, since when do you look at age when it comes to women? But this has never been an issue for men. We have men that have been MPs since independence.
Mm-hmm.
And they're probably now in the, I don't know, they're going into another term. And you can tell that these male counterparts should probably be in the Senate by now. But they're still in the lower house. Nobody has ever questioned that. But because it's a female MP, we now say, we look for something and we say, oh, you're not too old. I mean, when can we win?
Indeed. Honorable Chassis, Shanzi Mindimusinka Jerry Anurumeso. But I want to ask you, there's a listener who said, what were the contentious issues? I think we know quite a lot of them. What I would want to know perhaps from you is, what's still outstanding? What were some of the issues that may have, you know, people had wanted, agitated for them to be incorporated, but weren't?
One of the issues that was brought up, in particular by Honorable Gonese, whose work I must acknowledge insofar as these amendments are concerned, was the issue of the diaspora vote.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I think the Constitution is quite clear that the right to vote accrues to every citizen of this country. Mm-hmm. But I also think that we haven't given much thought to this particular matter. We need, I think, to interrogate it further and understand exactly what are the issues. How practical is it? What are the logistical issues? Are we able to reach every Zimbabwean wherever they are to enable them to vote? So I think that obviously this is an issue that I do not personally feel that it can be achieved for this election.
Uh-huh.
But it certainly has to be an issue for the next election, and we must as early as possible begin to look at those issues and come up with a possible framework that allows as many as possible of our citizens outside the country to be able to vote. But we need to map where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to come up with a system that then allows us to make a deliberate decision. As to say, some countries have said people in the diaspora will vote for the president.
Mm-hmm.
Because
they are not in any constituency.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we also have what I think is a legal stumbling block, because we are working with a word-based system. So you've got to be identified with a particular. If you're in Northern Ireland,
mm-hmm.
and you have been there for 10 years, you really cannot, I think, honestly claim that you live in Ward 17 in Glendale.
Mm-hmm.
If I ask my chairman there, Comrade Kudangiranwa, you say, I don't know that person.
Mm-hmm.
So we also then need to look at the legal framework itself and say, this is current system, does it support and enable people who are outside to participate electorally in the country? And in some countries like I think Nigeria and Kenya, they've mapped and then they've made a decision to say, okay, in Africa we're going to put infrastructure to allow people who are in South Africa and another African country, because that's where their population is. And so we then need to make informed decisions around those matters. Now, others have said that you have embassies and people in the embassies vote and that type of thing. But our embassies are not structured. Let's look at South Africa, for example. Our embassies in Pretoria, and it's not structured to have over a million people coming
to cast their votes. Yeah,
yeah. So I sometimes people make these political statements which are not supported by facts. So we need to and somebody from Cape Town. We have so many Zimbabweans in Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
Can they conceivably come to Pretoria to vote? I think really it's a huge logistical issue. So those are some of the things that we really need to look to say, what sort of infrastructure can we do it over the internet? Some countries have got software that they use for this purpose. So we need to be able now, I think, to... and I think ZEC must be seized with that matter, in addition to other stakeholders. So that was the one issue. There was also, I think, the issue that is commonly raised, where it is said that there has been... the ZEC has been... I think they call it securitization or something.
Militarization,
yes. Which, on the facts, really says that if you have been in the army, you can, literally, you cannot work for any government department, because that is viewed as militarization. But let's take into cognizance the fact that in 1980, when the war ended, people were demobilized. They joined an entire... gamut of employment opportunities. Private, some remained as soldiers, some joined Ministry of Health, some went into private companies, some became peasant farmers. And so when the term is used, it sounds like it's something that is really novel, but it's something that has always happened. And we can't criminalize or punish people for having gone to the war to fight to liberate the country and then to stay in the army to give us the peace and tranquility that we so much relish. So that I think is a matter that is outstanding in a sense, but which I think goes to the very root of our liberation struggle. I would say maybe that was... And of course the printing of... and the identification of the printer. People say want to know the process, but so far as I understand it, and I think ZEC have said so, they've operated within the confines of the Procurement Act, which allows the process that they have done. So sometimes when we don't agree, we feel that we are being shortchanged. But I want to say to Zimbabweans that this time around, I think we have an entirely new system.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot afford to play games, because with the entire world focusing on Zimbabwe,
mm-hmm.
we have had a delegation of political parties from Tanzania, for example. We've had them for the past week, and we've just come back from Vic Falls today, where we were with them discussing and learning from them. We've also come up with these structures where we've inter-party dialogue, which allows us to discuss openly and see solutions. So the checks and balances, in my view, are a lot. And the cost and the sanctions that we will receive as a country if we do not do things properly, they are obvious to everyone.
Mm. He's just talked about inter-party dialogue. A listener earlier had said, look, let's put Zimbabwe first, let's put party second. Do you feel that that is the sentiment that is in Parliament, that, you know, we... people are not necessarily towing party lines or politicking, but we'll say, look, we've done the best we can. The playing field, the electoral playing field, is a lot different now than it has been in the past. And so this will be a different election in many respects.
I think everybody across the political divide wants us to be able to use our common ground to better our country. You find that in Parliament, there are a lot of times when we agree from across the floor. And if you listen to the debate either over the radio or if you watch it over the TV, you know, you can see that people are not just applauding for people that are in their party alone. You know, the applause come from across the floor. And we have these parliamentary portfolio committees that incorporate all parties. And when you sit inside these committees, you see a lot more of this unity that we're talking about, because people see themselves as Zimbabwean and they look at the issues as the issues. In parliament, it's a different space where your constituency is listening to you, your party is listening to you, so you might not be able to see more of that unified approach. But whenever you have chairpersons of portfolio committees presenting, this has come from across the floor, and it has been debated outside of that space, and it comes from both sides or all sides. Now, if I go back to the women's issues again, we have a women's caucus in parliament that incorporates all parties, and women sit on their own to discuss women issues. And women's issues are not political. Like, you cannot make them ZANU-PF women's issues and MDC women's issues. They are women's issues. So you have youth, the committee that deals with youth, for example. Youth issues are youth issues. Like, you cannot separate them and say ZANU-PF youth are suffering this, but MDC youth are not suffering the same fate. So everybody's eager to have our country move from this idea of having divorced minds. Everybody wants to move on the same page. But because we do have these political parties, they're also fighting to lead. And you will have a party wanting to lead that same thing. ZANU-PF wants to lead in the unified arrangement. MDC and the MDC coalition wants to lead in the same unified arrangement. So there's a difference between fighting for power and then also fighting for development or fighting for a positive change in your country. I think we have moved very far ahead as far as speaking with one voice is concerned on many, many issues. It's just that right now we're in election mode, and everybody wants to show that their party is the best or their manifesto is the best. But I've seen a huge development, especially when we moved into the new dispensation, because there's so much hope, something different, something fresh. So everybody doesn't want to make a mistake. Now, what the one thing that we have to try to work on is the issue of trust, like Honorable Chassie had said. We have gone for a long period where there was a lot of mistrust. And this is like a marriage or a relationship between boyfriend and girlfriend, where if trust is broken, it takes a lot to build it back up. Now, I think we need to give each other a chance and see where we can go together, and let's act as if we're starting on a clean slate and see how far we can go, because a lot of things that will derail us have to do with not trusting each other. If the diaspora, for example, like we're talking about the diaspora vote, the main reason why some might be reluctant to include the diaspora vote is because we don't live in the same space. Our influences are different. You might live in Kenya and are influenced by the Kenyan environment. It might not necessarily apply to the Zimbabwean environment. And we need to sort of find a way to bridge that gap, whether it's because we have social media now and so on. We need to use it positively to reflect the true picture on the ground. If I live in a country that has bullet trains, you know, I can't automatically think that Zimbabwe can do it right now. You know, you have to research on what it took for that country to get to that point. And is Zimbabwe ready for that same change right now? So we need to be very practical about the type of change we want, and we can't jump stages. And we've got a long way to go, but for as long as we don't trust each other, it'll make it very difficult for us to develop.
Free, this is a listener getting in touch. Free, fair, and credible elections were always talk but remained lip service. How can we trust that the same people who kept quiet when violence happened for the last 3 decades and never opened up that there was violence during elections will today live to their words?
Well, we need everybody in the country to understand that each person has a right to vote for whichever individual they want to vote for, as a member of parliament, a councillor, a president. There are historical issues. If we continue to live in the past, we cannot move forward. We have one set of eyes which are both in front, and I think right now the new dispensation has given us hope. There is a lot of goodwill in many countries, and our president is heavily engaged together with the Minister for Responsible for Foreign Relations, and we are beginning to see a lot of interest from many organizations, from countries, from individuals that want to invest. They are just numerous. I was in Vic Falls today, and I met some of them. I met Zimbabweans who have come from abroad who are coming with investors. And so even at the airport, you can see that there is a new Zimbabwe here that is in the offing. So we need really to move forward. But also, in order to move forward, we cannot ignore the past. This is why I have said that we need serious introspection, and we also need to address the basis of mistrust. And that burden falls largely on government, and my party as a governing party, I think, is playing its role to re-enact the trust that is necessary for us to move forward. The code of conduct that we have come up with, for example, has been a joint effort by the parties in parliament. We have worked exceedingly well together on that code of conduct. We have been to see the Minister of Justice to tell him that this is what we have agreed on, and that's what is now in the electoral law. And so that is evidence that as Zimbabweans we can find each other, we can work together for the betterment of our country, and I think that we just need to be positive. We have too much negative energy at the moment, and energy which to at times one feels that we sort of desire failure.
Mm.
And yet I think all the positives are in place. The president is sending the necessary signals to all of us. Those of us who are involved in the inter-party dialogue have specific instructions to do the right things and to ensure that we interact with sincerity with our colleagues from the opposition.
I just want to add as well that when President Mnangagwa came into office during his 100-day period, he also signed into law the National Peace and Reconciliation Commission Act. And this National Peace and Reconciliation Commission is supposed to help to bridge certain gaps that we have as far as issues to do with violence are concerned, issues to do with disputes are concerned, not just issues of the past, but also current and prevention of future conflict. I think if I understood the president very well, he really wants this NPRC to be given the resources to help in situations like this. We always need a mediator when it comes to issues to do with violence, whether past, present, or future. And the NPRC is one of those mechanisms that will help us, I think, to be able to deal with some of these issues and to have a positive transition from one period to another.
KJ in Vic Falls, I think responding to the point you made earlier, Honorable Kanengoni Malinga, saying the reason why committee engagement with the people is poorly attended is because the previous administration had captured our political space. My grandmother cannot express herself honestly well under the watchful eye of the men in dark glasses. Hopefully, as we move forward, our interactions will improve and your jobs as representatives will become worthwhile. Thank you so much, KJ, for that contribution. We have Nyamashisha saying, the question of logistics for diaspora vote is just a ploy by ZANU-PF fearing a very probable defeat. Who said a million people can't come to Pretoria? As for ZEC, it's a captured institution. The laws governing and printing of ballot paper is very flawed, favoring the ruling party. Thank you so much, Nyama Shinsha, for that contribution. I'll just take a couple of more before I hand over to the MPs to respond. I think all these speak to the issues of mistrust that has been spoken about here. A couple of more contributions. Someone else was speaking about diaspora vote, saying countries like Mozambique, poor countries like Mozambique allow their people outside the country to vote, so we should also be able to do that. He also says these reforms were deliberately delayed because primary elections have already been held, hence women and youth quotas will not be met. That's from Jay Moyo in Echiweshe. Thank you so much for those. Let me hand over to you, Honorable Chazi, to quickly wrap up, perhaps respond to some of these things very quickly, and then give us rounding remarks, and then lastly over to you, Honorable Kanye.
Well, I think on the diaspora vote, I did indicate that we, the devil is in the detail. We need to understand exactly what the diaspora vote implies and what it is that we need to do. I do not, and there's also, I think, a misconception that everyone who is in Cape Town is anti-ZANU-PF or in the diaspora is anti-ZANU-PF. That's a myth.
Mm-hmm.
I think all parties have got followers there, and it will be in the interest of every party to have their members wherever they are voting. So we just need, I think, to be positive about it and to look at it together. I do not see being a person who is actively involved in some of the things that are occurring. I do not see or feel a desire to hide anything, and like I said, I think President Mnangagwa is giving excellent leadership at the moment. Zimbabweans are naturally impatient given where we have come from,
mm-hmm.
and we think that the pressure that they are putting both on the president and on government is necessary and good, and it will get proper responses. And so one hopes and looks forward to a free, fair and credible elections. But it's not a responsibility of one party or one individual. It's a collective responsibility of political parties, MPs, journalists, civil society and everyone that can play a role.
Lastly, over to you, Honorable Tabi, Kanengoni Malinga.
I think what I can say is that we need to redefine what it means to be a member of parliament, the qualifications of such a person, how the electorate should choose their members of parliament. It shouldn't really be about whether or not they have money, or if they can buy them alcohol, or things like that. Because in the true definition of it all, the role of the MP is in that house, in that august house, and they should be able to formulate laws that can help their constituents live better lives. Now, we have moved away from the issue of wanting to be an MP so that you can play this role. A lot of people want to be MPs for financial reasons. They probably think there's so much money.
Perceived.
I'll tell you now, there's not that much money. Because the actual role is not a financial one. If you look at MPs in the first world, they actually like strict requirements that even include you being a financially stable person to be able to be an MP, so that you focus solely on the role that you're supposed to be playing in parliament. We're going to lose a lot of MPs, a good quality MPs, because of the lack of knowledge of what an MP is supposed to do, how they're supposed to represent the people. Now, because we don't have this ingrained in our Zimbabwean system, we end up with a lot of violence, because the reason why people want positions is not for that representative role.
Mm-hmm.
It's for so many other different reasons. Even something like so that they can get a Ford Ranger, also they can get a vehicle, also mm-hmm. that they can stay in a hotel. You know, all these are misguided reasons for wanting to be an MP. And our electorate needs to... This takes education again.
Mm-hmm.
We need to educate the electorate on the quality of an MP, what exactly they should be able to do. We know that you don't have to be... Well, we have a rule that you don't have to, have a degree or a master's or PhD to be an MP, but you have to be able to adequately represent your constituency. MPs have been reduced to people who are supposed to bury people in constituencies, mm-hmm. who are supposed to take food to people, who are supposed to be there and give people money for school fees and so on and so forth, of which there is no budget for an MP to do all those things. So now people can no longer vote for their MPs for the correct reasons.
It's now become economic.
Yeah, it's become economic. It's become a financial game. If we move away from that, the violence in elections will reduce tremendously.
Well, we certainly hope for a peaceful election coming up, and I want to thank everyone who participated and sent us your messages. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening and for tuning in to the station and this program that we call Ask the MP. I want to thank my guests, Honorable Fortune Chassie. Thank you so much for coming through. Honorable Tabitha Kanengoni Malinga, thank you so much, ma'am, for coming through to the program. Thank you so much to Zimbabwe for tuning in. Stay tuned to ZFM Stereo. Up next, Health Matters with Larry. That and a whole lot more coming your way. Only on ZFM Stereo, my station, your station. Good night.